I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sal Licata back on the Fan. It is a pleasure to welcome in my old buddy. By the way, Schmelk, we're talking to John Schmelk now,
who
covers the Giants for Giants.com. He covers the Knicks for WFAN.com. He's got the Bank Shot podcast on WFAN.com. Schmelk, they don't make them like they used to here behind the scenes. I mean, you and I go way back, cutting tape, producing, running the board for, you know, conflict games. It almost took 25 minutes to be able to get this set up here so we could record this interview tonight. And I was thinking, man, Schmelke and I would have this under control here.
It was funny. I actually just did a Jet podcast with Scott Mason, who was an intern in my class, which was the fall of 2002. It is a long time ago, my friend.
Very long. I started in 2003, so you were there before me. It has been a long time. Anyway, I love what you're doing with all the Knicks and all the Giants stuff, and I was waiting for the right time to have you on and discuss the Knicks. What better night than now, coming off of the Knicks win against the Mavericks and Porzingis' return at the Garden? I know you were at the game. I took big issue with the Knicks fans here. And not that they're celebrating this win. All right, you're allowed to. That's fine. But the vitriol that was spewed toward KP, at least for me on TV, you know, the KP blanks chants, that was a little much. I don't mind the booing. I thought it was a little harsh. You're in the stands. What did you think of the atmosphere Knicks fans getting on Kristaps Porzingis?
I've been at many of the, what I like to call, boo the guy every time he touches the ball games. You know, you had that when LeBron went to the Heat, and then the first time he came to the Garden, they booed him. And it's happened a bunch of times before with guys that have done stuff to annoy Knicks fans. This might have been the worst reception I've seen. I give the Knicks fans credit. They kept it the whole game. Usually it'll wane in the second half, but they just laid into the guy. And look, I get it. He was supposed to be the next great player for the Knicks, and he demanded a trade, and he said he didn't want to be here. And nothing will get a Knicks fan more upset than a player basically telling New York, no, I don't want to be here anymore. Trade me. So by that respect, I get it. Somebody actually tweeted me a good comparison. It reminded him a lot of when Pat Riley made his return to the Garden in the 90s after he faxed in his resignation, and I think it was very similar to that. I think it was a good point.
But, Schmelk, here's my issue, and I understand. I love Pat Riley. That hurt me to death, but he left. He did leave, and the way that he left was bad. When the Knicks fans decide to spew the hatred towards Kristaps Porzingis, are they forgetting who's running things here? It makes it sound like, oh, he wanted out of New York and he left. Well, A, we don't know what the truth is. And B, if he did, in fact, want out of New York, don't you think that maybe it's because he doesn't trust the hierarchy to put him in the great best position to succeed? I mean, he's got four head coaches in four different years. Obviously, the owner's got issues. The GM, it's chaotic. You got Phil Jackson. I mean, Schmoke, there's got to be a reason. Let's try to look a little deeper than just hearing the one report, oh, he wanted out, let's boo the heck out of him. There's reasons to it. This team has been chaotic for 20 years.
Sal, you're right. Now, he has admitted that he told them he was not going to re-sign with them. Now, I'm of the belief that if they would have played hardball and forced him to sign that qualifying offer, he probably would have stayed because no one turns down max money to play in a qualifying offer for torn ACL. So, look, he did want out. He demanded a trade. He said, I'm not re-signing here. So that's on him, and he should get booed for that. However, everything else you said is true. And I think when you look at it, whether it's Dawn, where it starts at the top, I think he's kept his fingerprints kind of clean a little bit the last few years, except for the stuff off the court, you know, ejecting fans, the Charles Oakley thing. The most recent press conferences on Dolan, too, we made Mills and Perry go out there and have this dopey press conference. That was stupid. But look, if you can't point a finger at Steve Mills here, and admit to yourself, if you're a Knicks fan, that he's a big source of this problem, that the organization is responsible for not making the guy that was supposed to be your franchise player confident that he could win here long term, then you're wearing blinders and you're not helping anybody.
And that's the problem.
You're absolutely right.
And that's the problem that I have. It drives me nuts. I mean, they could chant KP, you know what, but they can't say anything about Mills, fire Mills. Mills is the problem. And look, now we're talking with John Schmelk, covers the Giants for Giants.com. And obviously, we're talking Knicks here. He covers the Knicks for WFAN.com. He's got the Bank Shot podcast, so make sure you check that out. You're also a Knicks season ticket holder and have been for a long time. You're part of the people that I'm talking about here. How could this fan base, Schmelk, and you've always been a passionate fan dating back to when I met you here interning at the Fan in 2003, and we ran the board for games with, you know, Frank Williams and Michael Sweetney, and you know, trying to watch that garbage. I've been kind of knocked out since my passionate 90s days. I can't take it anymore. How could this fan base be behind this organization to a point where they're now trusting an organization who's been awful for 20 years in a row, essentially, and blaming the star player that the inept organization happened to draft and then trade?
Now, I think the majority of fans do understand that Steve Mills and James Dolan are huge problems. I do think so. But I also believe that they got emotionally connected to Porzingis. They loved him, and then he broke up with them. It's no different when you're dating somebody and you love them to death and they're awesome, and then they break up with you and you hate them. I mean, that's pretty much exactly what's happened. So
I've been there before, yeah.
Yeah, I think we all have. So, you know, and that's the thing. Look, I do think most fans understand that Dolan's a big source of the problem, and the ones that don't are just guys that, you know, they're blind loyalists and you can't help him. And Mills has been here. Like, I think Mills got hired back in, like, 2000. And he's been in and out of this organization and that building for all of the last 20 years, which has been an absolute disaster. So he's part of the problem. And the fact that the Knicks have been this chaotic, they can't put a winner together, they can't attract free agents, all that is a huge part of the problem. And look, and I think if you want to bring this full circle to what happened last weekend too, Sal, look, I think David Fizdale has done a poor job as head coach. I don't think he's maximized the talent here. But even if he did maximize the talent on the roster, right, what are they going to win, 30, 32 games at most?
Right.
So when you get to the bottom line, it's on the roster. And when it's on the roster, who is that on? It's on the guy that picks the players. Who picks the players? Steve Mills. So if you really want to get down to the source of the issue, it's Mills. Who keeps Mills employed? It's James Dolan. Why don't big-time players want to come here? I think part of it's because of James Dolan, and that's your circle.
And that's why, I guess, it comes back to, I believe that that's the reason why Porzingis wanted out, and that is the biggest problem. And the last thing on the fans before we move on to the actual team here, it doesn't fall in line with the rest of the city. You know this about being around the Giants every single day. I mean, fans around here, maybe irrationally so, but they want to rip the Giants and fire Shermer, fire Gettleman, not even 2 years in. They want Adam Gase out after 9 weeks, three of them in which he's played with his back, you know, the third string quarterback. The Mets could never do right, even though they were in the World Series in 2015 and made the playoffs in 16. The Yankees will win 100 games every year. Oh, Cashman's not good enough. He doesn't get the right starting pitching. So why, for the one team who hasn't actually done anything outside of one 50-win season, or 54 wins to be exact, in the last basically 20 years, why then are these fans apologists?
I do believe, Sal, that if you went to Knicks fans and you said, all right, guys, here's what you can do. If you snap your fingers and you can remove Steve Mills and James Dolan from the equation, would you do it?
Yeah, Perry, too.
I think 99% of them would say yes. But I think they understand it's so hopeless to influence James Dolan and to get him to change what he does or how he operates that they've just given up. What are you going to do? The guy owns the team. The team and the building and the Rangers make him a bajillion dollars. He's not selling. It doesn't matter what you do, these protests and all this stuff. It doesn't do anything. He doesn't care. He laughs. He laughs. And I think that's why you've gotten some of the apathy and the way some fans react to it. And they try to rationalize it, Sal, because they have no choice but to accept it, because Dolan ain't going anywhere.
And then what they do is celebrate a Bobby Portis game and now a win against the Mavericks like it's the 90s playoffs. So I have a tough time with it. All right, let's move on. We're talking with John Schmelk, covers the Knicks for WFAN.com, host of the Bank Shot podcast on the website as well. The actual Porzingis trade, at the time, I didn't love it because they're giving a known commodity up, you know, a known potential star with him in hopes of acquiring big-time free agents. How bad do you think that trade backed up this franchise here for the next several years?
how bad that trade is going to be, in my opinion, is going to almost be solely dependent on what Kristaps Porzingis is. If Porzingis turns out to be a guy who's injury prone, can't finish seasons, can't create his own shot, is an inefficient offensive player, and turns out to be, you know, the 30th to 40th best player in the league, then you know what? The trade's not going to be bad, because you don't trade him. You have that player on a max contract, and he's taking up $30 to $40 million a year cap space, and he's not good enough to be worth that money, right? So by trading him, you're not committed to him for that amount of money. So if he turns out not to be that good, the trade's not that bad. I think we know at this point the return is not very good. So what's going to impact how painful this trade is directly related to what Porzingis becomes, and I think the jury is still very much out on that.
Interesting angle. I would consider it a failure only because they ended up with nobody in free agency, and you're going to have to spend that money somewhere.
Well, no, there are two draft picks left, Sal. There are two draft picks left.
And look, hopefully they get somebody in here who actually knows what they're doing, whether it's Sam Presti, Masai Ujiri. So, I mean, that to me is the next step. All right, how about current roster point guard situation? In a league, Schmelk, that is dominated by offensive guards and guard play in particular, obviously, the Knicks don't have, they don't even have a point guard here. You believing in Dennis Smith Jr., Neil Akina? Give me your take here on the Knicks point guard situation.
Yeah, to me, I know what you mean by point guard. I would just say they need a creator, right? They need, and even if it's a two guard, that's fine. You need somebody that you can put the ball in that player's hands and run the offense through them. And you can't do that with big men anymore. It's got to be a perimeter player, right? Barrett's not that guy. He's 19 years old. It's not fair to him. You can't ask him to be that guy. Even at, you know, what the peak level you thought Neil Aquino was going to be, he was never supposed to be that type of guy. He's a different type of guard. Dennis Smith Jr. is the only guy that actually has the potential to be that type of player, but he hasn't shown anything to make you believe that he can do it. So I think that was one of the reasons they went out and signed Julius Randle, right? Because they thought he could be a guy that can create his own shot, be an efficient scorer, and you can run some offense through him. He's been a disaster. So I think really if you look at why the team's been a lot worse than maybe some people thought so far this year, Dennis Smith's been a non-factor. He had the tragedy with his stepmother, which is obviously terrible. But when he has played, he's been brutal until tonight when he played pretty against Dallas. And Julius Randle's been a nightmare. He just has all of his bad parts of his game showed up, but his efficient scoring didn't. That's a big problem. So if you really want to pinpoint the reasons why they're so bad, you're right. They don't have a guy that can create his own shot and create shots for other people.
How about your thoughts on RJ Barrett? My biggest knock, and I believe we talked about this after the draft.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that I didn't like it just based on the stuff that you heard. Okay, well, his strength is going to the rim. Forget about that. He could only go left, whatever. But his strength is attacking the rim, and he's not good at free throws. Well, we've seen that. He's a guard who's got, look, he's got good size. He's physical. I love the way he attacks the rim. I miss watching that style of play, so it's fun to watch him, but you got to be able to hit free throws, and it would be nice if he had an outside shot to go with it. I know there's room to grow there, but what do you think overall of RJ Barrett so far?
I think he's probably exceeded my expectations a little bit. I would have picked him at three. I wasn't super excited about it, but I thought he was the best player that was available. I think he's passed better than I thought he would. He's been a better defender than I thought he would. But he's exactly the shooter I thought he'd be. Now, I think he'll get better as a free throw shooter. He's shot basically between 65 and 70%, no matter where he's played the last few years. So I think this sub-50% stuff will go away with a larger sample size. At least I hope it does. But look, he's just not an efficient scorer. He wasn't an efficient scorer at Duke. And if you're not an efficient scorer in college, you're not going to be an efficient scorer your first year in the pros. So shooting is going to be his wild card skill. If he becomes a good shooter or a really good shooter, he's going to be an excellent NBA player. If he doesn't, he's not. And we'll just have to wait and see how he develops that part of his game.
What about Kevin Knox? Looks like he's improved his shot this year here. But still, you watch him. He looks like he's playing in slow motion. I mean, no energy, really, certainly defensively. But your thoughts? I don't think Knox is going to be a star player here. You hope he can be a contributing player. Your thoughts on Kevin Knox?
Yeah, I'm with you. I never thought he was going to be a star. And to me, he's a guy that's going to be eventually a stretch four. That's going to be a good catch and shoot guy. He can maybe drive past some bigger players that, you know, but he's not that quick side to side. I think he's playing out of position at the three, though he might not be strong enough to play a power forward yet. He'll grow into it. I agree. He's better offensively, still doesn't pass enough and not a good enough passer. And he's just not good defensively, but at least we've seen some progress from him as an offensive player.
Couple more, Schmelk, before we let you go. We're talking with John Schmelk. Yeah. He covers the Knicks for WFAN.com, host of the Bank Shot podcast on WFAN.com, and also does a bunch of Giants stuff for Giants.com. Mitchell Robinson looks like a player. I love the draft pick because love the potential. He's been a stud here. If he could just stay healthy, your take on Mitchell Robinson so far, what we've seen from him?
I think it's hard to call him a foundation piece because of the type of player he is, but what he does, he's great at. Rim runner. If they can actually get spacing and get enough shooters on the floor to run screen and roll, he's a great finisher with that. Obviously a great shot blocker, rim protector. He's got to control his foul trouble a little bit. He fouls too much to allow control. But, yeah, look, I think he can be a starting center here for 10 years and be a borderline all-defense type of player at some point. So, yeah, I think he's one of the guys that you try to build around. Unfortunately, Sal, as you know, the NBA just is not built around centers anymore. And as much as he'll help, he's just not a guy that's going to be, you know, one of your two or three best players, especially offensively.
I miss the 90s. I miss the game being built around centers, the 85-83 finals, defense being played. Three-pointers were actually hard to come by. I mean, you watch the game now, there's no defense. Everybody's shooting three balls. It's lazy basketball. But, yeah, I do like Mitchell Robinson as a player. Schmoke, what's the future then? What's the end game here? All right, let's just say they fire Fizdale, which we could assume is going to happen, and it's just a revolving door of head coaches constantly. Let's even say we take it a step further, and the team continues to struggle the rest of the way. Dolan makes, in my opinion, the right move and gets rid of both Mills and Perry, and you get a whole new regime in here. What are we looking at with this roster? What do you think the next couple years hold, best-case scenario for this Knicks team?
Yeah, big picture-wise, Sal, I don't care who the head coach is. I don't care who the GM is or the president is. They're not going to have a chance to be a good team until the 2021-22 season. They're going to have cap space next summer, in the summer of 2020, but there just aren't any good players available. And they're not going to be able to get anybody in here that's going to significantly make this team better unless they go and do something stupid and trade for Chris Paul or someone like that, DeMar DeRozan, which would be a huge mistake. If the Knicks, they'll probably do that, but it would be a huge mistake if they did. So I think you're looking at the summer of 2021. At that point, Randall's contract can come off the books. Try to sign a free agent. At that point, you'll have three more draft picks. Your pick this year, your pick the next year, and a Mavericks pick to add three more lottery picks, theoretically, to the team. And that's when you hope you start getting better. So if they make all these moves like you're talking about, and I don't think it would necessarily be a bad thing to get better people at those positions in, though I don't like the instability of all, as you mentioned, that's when you make your run. You make your run in the summer of 2021, and then the following year, you hope you can maybe put a playoff run together. Well, then, and yes, that requires patience, but it just is what it is.
Well, then, do you think Mills is the right guy? Because he has shown he's been patient here, though, and they've been talking about the long plan. They want to draft and develop guys. They're not going to go out there and bring in bad contracts or go sign bad contracts.
No, Sal, the theory is good. The plan is good. Do you have any faith in him successfully executing the plan?
No, because I don't trust him picking the right players. I mean,
that's not. Yeah. And that's hard. Dude, teams have been trying to build through the draft forever. The Magic sucked for 10 years picking in the top 10 every year.
Right.
The Kings sucked for 10 years picking in the top 10 every year. Because it's hard to find good players. And no, I don't trust Mills to do that.
Well, the way that they're set up now would be, I mean, if, let's just say Sam Presti or Masai Ujiri, whatever, those are a couple of names that the Daily News reported earlier in the week or last week, whatever it was. Let's say they get one of those guys here. This organization is not as in bad of shape. Let's just forget the owner for a second because you know that he's not going anywhere, as you said. If you get a GM like that that's established, that you trust to make the picks, they have a bunch of picks. They don't have any bad contracts. You know, they have some young players with the potential, R.J. Barrett, Mitchell Robinson. Maybe they're not in as bad a shape if they had the right people steering them moving forward.
No, you're right. And they're not in bad shape. And the one good thing Phil Jackson did when he was here was not trade future picks. Mills and Perry have not traded future picks. They have not locked them into these onerous long-term contracts either to hamper them in the future. So, yeah, the future is bright. The potential is there. If you have people that are able to execute the plan and take advantage of these draft picks and financial flexibility, they can develop into a good team. But getting to this point has been the easy part. The hard part is taking the next step. And the question is whether or not the people in place now are the guys to do it. And I think there are a lot of reasons to think they aren't.
He is John Schmelk. You can catch him on WFAN.com covering the Knicks, the Bank Shot podcast. Also, Giants.com covers everything Giants. So make sure you check that at Schmelk, S-C-H-M-E-E-L-K on Twitter. Thanks, Schmelk. I appreciate a couple minutes.
Anytime, Sally. And just real quick, the Giants just launched a new podcast network. I want people to check it out. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants Rewind with Carl Banks, and Giants Huddle. You can check those out on your favorite podcast platforms. You go to Giants.com, click on the podcast page, and you can subscribe to all those podcasts. Make sure you check them out.
And it's good content, so make sure you follow Schmelk and check out all that stuff. All right, Schmelk, we'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, Sal. Appreciate it. Always happy to come on.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.